This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Reverend Peter Wallace, who is president of the Alliance for Christian Media and executive producer and on-air interviewer of Day One. We're talking with Peter by phone in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome, Peter. Are you there? Let's see, Peter, I can't hear you. Let's see if we can push a few buttons here. Are you there? We seem to have missed our connection. We'll try again. In the meantime, let me tell listeners what Day One is. Day One is what used to be called the Protestant Hour. Since 1945, it's been broadcasting weekly some of the best preachers in America from Protestant Christian churches. The Protestant Hour became joined up with the Episcopal Media Center, and together they've formed a new organization that's called Day One, and I believe we now have Peter Wallace with us. Can you hear me, Peter?
I sure can, Steve. How are you?
Great. Good to have you here.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. We're on the air and glad to have you. And you're in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was just telling listeners about a little bit of the history of dayone.org and the weekly broadcasts of great Protestant preaching that's been going on back since 1945, before it was called the product, when it was called the Protestant Hour. Now, how long have you been associated with what is now called dayone.org?
Well, I have been involved since 2001, since March of that year. The program was still called the Protestant Hour at the time. And at the time, we were working with four Protestant denominations, the Presbyterians, the Lutherans, the Methodists, and the Episcopalians. And each one of them had a producer assigned to the program. And so they selected their preachers. Each denomination had a quarter of the year, or 12 or 13 programs a year, and they would rotate. So they did all the selecting and so forth. We had another host. And one of the first things that they told me when I came on board was that they really wanted to change the name of the program. The Protestant Hour, as you had just mentioned, started in 1945 with those denominations and had been on the air every week. And so it was quite a historic program. But by the early 2000s, they felt that, well, for one thing, the term Protestant didn't have as much currency. If people weren't really engaged in church, they did not really necessarily understand what a Protestant was.
In fact, I got
emails or letters early in those years saying, well, what are we protesting?
Yes.
And they wanted something a little more positive, a little more media-friendly. And the other part was that the program had never been an hour. It had always been a half hour, but it was in back in the day when, you know, you had a lot of programs that had that hour in the name, even though it wasn't an hour. So that was one of our first tasks, was to come up with a new name, and in consultation with the producers and others, we ended up with Day One. And so it's been Day One since 2002.
And I might interrupt just to let listeners know that's a numeral one.
That's correct. Well, dayone.org will get you either whether you spell it out or you use the numerals.
Ah, good. Okay.
You get to our website and you can listen to our podcasts of our programs. And so we chose the name Day One because the program airs on about 200 stations now from coast to coast and in eight other countries. And it usually airs on Sunday, usually Sunday morning, so that's the first day of the week, so Day One. And we thought of the days of creation in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures in Genesis. The first day brought light, and we try to bring light to our times. And it just seemed a positive, this is the first day of the rest of your life kind of name. And so we went with the name, and it's been very popular. And some people still call it the Protestant Hour because they've listened to it for so long that way. But It has been day one, and we hope it will continue to be a positive resource on the radio and online.
And so it's heard on 200 different stations, and depending on the region, I was checking, since our program, Keeping the Faith, is heard in Illinois and Indiana, I was checking how many different radio stations it's on in these two states, and it's a dozen or so. And so people, it looks like, throughout both states can find it on their radios. But if not these days, the podcasts, as you say, are available. People on their smartphones or computers or tablets or whatever can go to dayone.org and hear any of the previous programs at their convenience.
That's correct. Just like your website, we actually post our program, which airs on Sunday, the Tuesday or Wednesday before. And the reason for that is because a lot of churches, Sunday school programs or study groups or whatever, will listen to the program or read the transcript in preparation for the Sunday, because we use what is called the Revised Common Lectionary, which is used in almost all mainline Protestant churches, and even it's very similar to what's used in the Roman Catholic Church. And so all of our most of our churches that would be represented through day one, the mainline denominations, use the same scriptures that our preachers use in their sermons. And so it's kind of a good resource for clergy and lay people to kind of figure out, what is this saying? What is this text saying to me?
And we you have more than four Protestant denominations now involved.
And early in the 2000s, actually about a year or two after I came on board, most of the headquarters of the mainline churches had to make some financial cutbacks, as you know. And so we became more of an independent organization. We have very good close ties with the denominations, but they weren't able to financially support us. And so we thought, well, we can open up our program to additional representatives of the mainline churches. And we invited the United Church of Christ and the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, which is large on the West Coast, on the East Coast and the Southeast. Those are kind of the Jimmy Carter Baptists, as we call them, the moderate Baptists. We have Disciples of Christ, the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, and American Baptist and National Baptist, and on and on.
United Church of Christ, I noticed.
Right. And it's interesting because, in this day, there's so much change in the religious world, as you keep your finger on the pulse of faith. And what we are finding is that the churches that we work with, whose clergy participate in our program, are very active, thriving communities of faith in their cities and towns. People are saying the church is dying, and there is, membership is dwindling in many cases, and people are experiencing the spiritual but not religious phenomenon and not really engaging in organized religion as much as they had been. And, all those are true, but there are a lot of exceptions to those, and we're finding a very vibrant, active faith that's involved in community service and in progressive causes and so forth, represented through this program. So we find ourselves kind of as one of the very few voices for a more moderate, progressive Christian faith. And that's has not been very common in the media. The evangelical and conservative and Pentecostal forms of Christianity seem to have a much broader grasp of the use of media. So we feel like we're a little a voice crying in the wilderness for some of those more progressive values of faith and of welcome, inclusion, and that sort of thing. So, and social justice. So those are some of the things that many of our preachers are able to share through their messages on our program.
Let me reintroduce our guest for those who may have joined Keeping the Faith after the top of the hour. We're talking with the Reverend Peter Wallace, who is president of the Alliance for Christian Media and executive producer and on-air host of Day One. You can find more information about this at dayone.org. It's a regular weekly program heard on 200 radio stations across the U.S. With some of the great Protestant preachers, Christian preachers of our time. Let me invite listeners to join this conversation. This is a live call-in show every Sunday evening here on WILL AM 580 and heard also at 90.9 FM HD3, as well as heard online, of course. You may join the conversation by punching in 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. If you're within the 217 area code near Urbana, Illinois, where the program originates at the University of Illinois Studios, you may punch in 333-9455 to access local lines. Our technical director, Kyle Crowell, will answer the phone and put you in a queue to talk with our guest today, Peter Wallace, who's talking to us by phone from Atlanta, Georgia. Tell us a little bit about your studio there, where you operate from, and tell us how all this happens. How do you select your guests? How do you interview them? Is it by phone like we're doing today? How do you produce these programs? They're wonderfully produced, and it's a great sound when the ones I've listened to.
Well, thank you, Steve. We do have a studio. Our offices and studio are actually in a building on the campus of an Episcopal church in Midtown Atlanta, All Saints Episcopal Church. We've been here about 12 years, and before that, there was a large building on the campus of Emory University in Atlanta, which housed the Protestant Radio and Television Center, which was the home for the Protestant Hour and other programming back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and so forth until we moved here. Technology has changed so dramatically that we just didn't need that big of a facility, and Emory University really wanted that property back, so we worked a good deal. But we do have a state-of-the-art studio here. We have a producer, Donald Jones, who has worked on the program actually for about 23 years, so he goes back to the days of the tape and having to edit on tape. Of course, he is thrilled by the digital media that we have available now. But our preachers do come here, and they come from all over the country. We prefer to have a studio sound. I think our radio stations appreciate the quality. And it isn't live. It's recorded usually 8 to 10 weeks ahead of time. And they will come to our studio, and we'll record the sermon, and then we record opening and closing interviews. So we do it out of order, and it's all edited. But we talk to the preacher about his or her ministry, their background, and ask maybe questions about faith and life and the church and so forth. Sometimes they've written books we'll talk about. And then the follow-up interview is kind of after we've heard the sermon, we ask a few questions about how can we respond to what you said here? What can we do to put this to work in our own lives, in our communities, in our churches? And so that's basically it. We select the preachers through all kinds of means. Everyone is kind of different. Either I have learned about them from some some way or other. We are involved in some preaching conferences and so forth, so I get to meet a lot of folks. We also have a very good advisory board, and it's composed of well-known preachers and professors in seminaries and so forth, who occasionally will give us names or help us approve suggested preachers to us.
And I noticed your list of your advisory board and your trustees on your website. It's quite impressive. Peter, we have our first caller. Let's go to line number one. You're on the air with Peter Wallace. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. I wonder, what is the utility of the Jesus Seminar for your type of effort? Is that, does it inform you or your programming in any way? And if not, then what is your view of the Jesus Seminar?
That's a great question. We don't have any relationship with the Jesus Seminar. And as those listeners who may not be aware, it was a gathering of scholars who have studied the New Testament scriptures, especially the Gospels in this case, and through a variety of scholarly means, historical dating and comparison of documents and so forth, tried to determine the trustworthiness of the sayings of Jesus in the Gospels.
The historical historical basis for them, perhaps.
Correct. Uh-huh. And so they went through a process where they sort of voted on each saying of Jesus, whether, yes, this is something he most definitely would have said, to all the way to, this is very doubtful and it was probably added by a later editor. We could argue, you know, their choices all day long. We did have, a year or two ago, we had Marcus Borg on the program as a preacher, and he was one of the scholars involved in that movement. But we haven't really had any sort of relationship with the Jesus Seminar per se.
Thank you for that call, and we are happy to have other callers with questions or comments for our guest today, Peter Wallace, from Day One. Peter, let's talk a little bit more about, you mentioned a preaching conference, and I noticed on your website you're advertising one that'll be in Nashville, Tennessee soon. Would you like to say something about that?
Absolutely. This is a fantastic annual conference. It goes from Monday evening through Friday morning, so it's all week. And the day goes from about 8 in the morning till about 9 or so at night. The conference is called the Festival of Homiletics, homiletics being the term, the scholarly term for preaching. And it is put on by an organization which is now part of Luther Seminary, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's under their auspices now. And they managed to put together an incredible roster of preachers and scholars who will lead worship services and provide sermons and lectures. I'm privileged to lecture this year, and it's in Nashville this year. They rotate cities. It's usually in Nashville, Minneapolis, and Atlanta. And I'm presenting a lecture on preaching a passionate Jesus, which is related to a book that I wrote that came out early this year. It is a fantastic event. If people are interested in more information about that, they can go to festivalofhomiletics.org, or they can go through our website at dayone.org and get more information. People who are interested in preaching and learning more about preaching, or those who are in school to become clergy persons, they usually get about 1,500 people at this conference, and it's just an amazing wide range of people from all over North America. It's quite something. The other wonderful part of it is they bring some wonderful musicians in of all kinds, from jazz to contemporary to, you know, choirs and so forth. So it's quite quite an event.
And do you have the dates for that? I don't have your website open
yes,
at the moment.
Yes, it's May 13th through 17th this year.
May 13th through 17th, Nashville, Tennessee, Festival of Homiletics. Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about your 2012 book, The Passionate Jesus. That's your most recent book. You've had earlier ones on the Psalms and others, but tell us about a little bit about The Passionate Jesus.
Well, this came out of a time that I had, Steve, where I was going through a lot of difficult problems personally, and I was kind of suffering with all kinds of emotions myself, from anger to grief to confusion and frustration and so forth. And I took a retreat and spent some time just rereading the Gospels, and what I discovered was that Jesus, as I read in the Gospels, exhibited these same emotions too. And I had been brought up with sort of a Jesus, you know, the stained glass type of Jesus, the Jesus in the movies like The Greatest Story Ever Told. They were so pristine and cool and calm and kind of above the grit and grime of human existence, and they just didn't seem to have much life to them and much emotion. And I kind of adopted that approach to emotions as Christ-like, to not really express emotions and then try to stuff your emotions so that you wouldn't get into trouble or whatever. And here I'm finding throughout the Gospels that Jesus was one who really felt his feelings and was very clear and direct with people about how he felt, whether it was his disciples or the religious leaders or even a grieving widow or whatever, whoever it might be. He was very direct, very honest, very authentic. And as I kind of wrestled with that personally, I realized, well, maybe that's the model that I should be following. Somebody who is in touch with how they feel and why they feel that way, and seeking to follow in Jesus' example of doing good and yet being honest and transparent. So that's how I came to write the book. And so in the book, we look at examples of Jesus' love and anger and grief and fear and joy and kind of try to get an image of who he really was as a human being. He was the Son of God, but he's also wholly human. And so he felt the same emotions that all of us do. And I think that has helped me relate to him better and to understand what it means actually to follow Jesus.
We're talking with Peter Wallace from dayone.org. In Atlanta, Georgia, by phone today on Keeping the Faith. We're going to take a little minute for a couple things. One, I need to invite listeners to contribute to our current fund drive here at WILL. As a public radio station, you know, every so often we do have to ask people to make contributions to make programs like this continue to be possible. And we know not only locally produced programs, but all the things you get through NPR here on WILL are so valuable to all of us in the community that can hear it. And we do give you an opportunity to be supportive, and this is one of those times. So if you'd like to make a pledge, you may call 217-244-9455. We know many listeners Keeping the Faith pledged to this program. Perhaps you've already pledged again in 2013, but if not, this is your chance. You may call 244-9455 in the 217 area code or go to willpledge.org. That's WILL, of course, willpledge.org. And we accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Let me add my encouragement to those you've heard from other people on the radio here to give generously to help support public radio here in Illinois and Indiana. Let's hear now a little bit about what will be happening here tomorrow on WILL on Focus.
She's made people laugh about her battle with cancer and the loss of her faith, not to mention her sexually indeterminate Saturday Night Live character, Pat. Now Julia Sweeney's new book, If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother, looks at why she decided to become a mother, how she adopted a daughter, and learned by doing what motherhood is all about. I'm Jim Meadows, and Julia Sweeney will be my guest on Focus Monday morning at 10 on WILL AM 580.
That's another live listener-supported program here on Illinois Public Media. Today, our guest on Keeping the Faith is Peter Wallace. He's telling us a little bit about his most recent book, The Passionate Jesus, that came out last year in 2012. Peter, tell us how you personally got to the place where you are. I notice you're in the process of receiving holy orders from the Episcopal Church, but I also notice in your background you went to a very conservative Dallas Theological Seminary. How did you grow up in terms of your own family of origin and their faith?
Sure. We all have journeys, and some of us take us to all kinds of different places. I've had a wonderful spiritual journey. I was raised as a PK, a preacher's kid. My father was a United Methodist minister in the state of West Virginia, in the Conference of West Virginia. And so I was raised very active in the church. And my father, I admire, he passed away about 6 years ago. He had retired some years earlier. But as a preacher, he was just amazing. I, of course, as a kid, did not appreciate that as much as I would now. And now I regret not listening a little more closely. And so we had it was a wonderful family upbringing and very active in the church. I was thinking the other day, I actually went to Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, and received a bachelor's in journalism. And that came about because one summer in vacation Bible school, I think it was fourth grade, the teacher, Mrs. Robinette, had us do a newspaper, create a newspaper as if it had been published during the Apostle Paul's time. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. And created the newspaper, you know, with news stories about this crazy cult leader, Paul, and then there'd be an ad for, you know, a used chariot dealer and so forth. And I just thought that was so fun that I decided I wanted to become a journalist and went to college, got my journalism degree, worked on the school paper, and then on graduation got a job with a weekly newspaper in West Virginia called the West Virginia Hillbilly, which was focused on politics and culture and business and politics. Yeah, I said politics, but it was probably twice politics. But it was a great paper, and it was a great learning experience. But what I started wrestling with is I really wanted to combine the communication aspect with my faith. And I had kind of taken a right turn in college, involved in a campus ministry, and many of my fellow students ended up going to seminary, to Dallas Theological Seminary, and I knew that if I was going to fulfill what I sensed was this calling to communicate my faith, I needed to know more about the Bible and theology and so forth. So I went to Dallas and had an excellent education. Theologically, I have changed considerably, but the tools that I learned there were very helpful. And but what happened, Steve, was when I graduated, I took a job with an organization, a parachurch organization, evangelical one, as an editorial director, which fulfilled this calling, and was involved in a church and so forth. And there were just a lot of things happened that kind of drove me to a spiritual crisis. There were some things that just didn't add up for me, and I could see the faith that I believed in very strongly. There were just some things that weren't working, and I was seeing the effects of those in some folks' lives, and it really kind of threw me for a loop, and I started exploring other churches, and one Sunday ended up in an Episcopal church here in Atlanta, and I had never experienced an Episcopal service before, but the combination of the ancient liturgy and the brilliant sermon that I heard and just the warmth of the people and the spirit there, that became home, and I became an Episcopalian in 1990. And so I was ordained when I was in seminary by the church that I was a member of at that time, and had wrestled with the question, should I pursue parish ministry like my father and my grandfather, or not? And I tried to settle that in seminary. I was involved in a UCC church for a year and loved it, but I still really sensed this call to communication. And this job now is kind of the perfect job for me. I mean, I just love it because I believe in the message that we're getting out, and it's fun to put together. But along the way, I kind of have wrestled with my own personal call, and I've been involved in church as sort of a layman, even though I'm ordained, but I'm not ordained by the Episcopal Church. And so the last few years, I really felt that now was the time to consider and pursue being ordained as an Episcopal priest. And
what's that process been like?
Well, it's been incredible. It's been on top of everything else I'm doing, so it's been quite stretching, but so rewarding, because in the Episcopal Church, you really have to work through a process that really ensures that you know what you're getting into and they know what they're getting into with you, and I think that's a good thing.
So you have to be vetted, shall we say.
Exactly.
Aren't you required to take some courses in an Episcopal seminary?
That's correct. And since I had a master's of theology already, I've been taking some courses in Anglican studies at Candler School of Theology at Emory University here in town. And I'm just about to complete those courses, and so hopefully by this time next year, God willing, and the diocese willing, I'll be able to serve in a parish alongside what I'm doing now. I fully intend to continue working on day one and so forth. But I have fallen in love, Steve, with the life of the parish and parish ministry. And what we do is, during the discerning process, where we're trying to figure out, is this something I want to do? And they're trying to find out if they think I would be good at it. They put you in a church to serve and observe and learn, and that was quite a wonderful experience for me. And now in seminary, we are placed in another parish, something, you know, a different sort of parish than we've been used to. And I'm now at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Atlanta. It's a large parish. I've never really been involved in a large multi-clergy parish, and it has been incredible to work alongside and watch the clergy and be mentored and have opportunities to teach and preach and so forth. So it's quite stretching. It's very exciting, and I've just enjoyed it immensely.
Let me give the phone numbers again for our listeners who'd like to join this conversation today with Reverend Peter Wallace, who is president of the Alliance for Christian Media in Atlanta, Georgia, a national organization, as well as the executive producer and on-air interviewer for the Day One series of great Christian preachers of our time that are heard on 200 radio stations throughout the U.S. weekly. The numbers to reach us, 1-800-222-9455. If it's a long-distance call anywhere from within the continental U.S., you may be listening online, we know. And if you'd like to use that number, you may call us. If it's a local call within the 217 area code, simply punch in 333-9455. And again, those numbers are different than if you want to make a pledge to support WILL, Illinois Public Media. That number, again, is 217-244-9455. So we're happy to have you ask questions of our guests about the state of preaching today. Peter Wallace hears some great preaching every week and helps produce the program that shares those preachers with the world. Let's talk about who some of the stars have been, the memorable ones, the people you're just so proud after you've heard their sermon to say, we had them on day one. I noticed you had someone from our listening area fairly recently do a one of your video shorts, a three-minute video, Reverend Dr. Lewis Galloway from Indianapolis. He, of course, is one of the great preachers of this region.
He preached on the program last year, and we videotaped that video reflection. We've had, I mean, it's very difficult to pick favorites. This year, we've been privileged to have folks like John Philip Newell, who is a Scottish teacher and preacher and author. He's written a number of books, for instance, on Celtic Christianity and stewardship of the earth and so forth. We also had the preachers earlier this year, five of them, from the collegiate churches in New York City, Marble Collegiate Church, Middle Collegiate, and so forth. Michael Brown is the senior minister at Marble Collegiate, and Jacqueline Lewis at Middle Collegiate, and there were three others. And so that was the first time we've had Reformed Church in America preachers on the program from the collegiate church. So that was historic and a wonderful series. We've had, you know, it's interesting because we have very young preachers. We had recently Matthew Gaventa, who has just graduated from seminary and has taken a church in Amherst, Virginia, Amherst Presbyterian Church. But he won the David H.C. Reed Preacher Scholar Award, which is given by Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York. Young man with, I think, a great future ahead of him. And then, on the other hand, we have some of the older saints of the church, Bill Self, Dr. Bill Self, who just retired after 60 years of ministry. He's 80, as pastor of a mega church here in the suburbs of Atlanta. He is also on our board, but he's been a very popular preacher over the years on the program because he knows how to tell a good story, but he also preaches the gospel and in fresh ways. And so we have all sorts. We had probably some of our favorite preachers are Barbara Brown Taylor, who is a well-known Episcopal priest and author. She's written several best-selling books.
I noticed you also, when you talked about younger preachers, I noticed you've had a couple times a preacher from our region, our listening area in Chicago, Illinois, Reggie Weaver.
Reggie Weaver, absolutely. First Presbyterian in Chicago.
Young African-American, brilliant preacher.
And yes, he definitely has a future. We also, coming up later this year, from Lake Forest, Illinois, Christine Shakoyan, pastor of First Presbyterian Church. Looking forward to working with her. But we have, you know, we have all sorts of preachers. We have another favorite is Susan Sparks, who is the senior pastor of Madison Avenue Baptist Church in New York City, who used to be an attorney and then went into stand-up comedy, and then became a Baptist minister. So she's like a walking joke, you know. a lawyer, a comedian, and a Baptist minister walked into a bar. And she is just, she's written a wonderful book, and she's just very positive, but she's hilarious too. But then she gets you with her message. And so she's coming back probably in 2014 to our program. So we
how far in advance do you schedule preachers?
I actually have all but a few dates scheduled for 2013, and I have about five already scheduled in 2014. So we try to get far enough advanced to give folks time to really prepare their messages. All these people are very busy with active ministries and so forth. So it's interesting, Steve, because in the early days of the Protestant Hour, each denomination would select one preacher to preach for 13 weeks.
Wow.
And they would have the whole quarter. And often books would be published as a result with
sure.
sermons compiled. It's very difficult for us to get more than two programs from a preacher today because, for one thing, I think people like the variety.
Sure.
They just, I can't imagine how anybody would be able to create, 12 or 13 sermons on top of what they're already doing.
Right.
So.
We have about 20 minutes left in our Keeping the Faith program today. Let me take a moment to let listeners know who our guests will be in the next few weeks. And since many people hear these programs on podcasts, let me remind folks that today is April 21st in the year 2013. You may be listening to this at a later time, but coming up next week on April 28th, 2013, we have two guests, Professor Chester Alwis, Emeritus Professor of Music at the University of Illinois. Choral directing is his specialty, and he and Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple will be talking about an upcoming performance of Handel's oratorio, Judas Maccabeus. The performance will be in Smith Music Hall at the University of Illinois on Sunday evening, May 19 at 7:30. But next Sunday evening, they'll be talking about that program. They're talking about that work, wonderful musical work. In addition, the two of them will be giving some explanation about the background, about the biblical story of Judas Maccabeus at Sinai Temple on Tuesday, April 30th at 7:30. So there will be a performance, May 19, April 30. There'll be a discussion about the upcoming performance as well as here on the radio live on April 28th, Keeping the Faith. On May 5th, our guests will be Julie Beiler, another choral conductor, and a wonderful soprano singer from New York, Elizabeth Treat. They'll be talking about their upcoming concert May 12. That will be of the chorale, a concert of the chorale that will include many wonderful classic musical works. And Elizabeth Treat will be one of the soloists for that concert May 12. The University YMCA is a longtime supporter of Keeping the Faith program here on WILL, and they have a rabbi speaking this coming Friday, April 26, 2012, at noon at the University YMCA, Rabbi Rogerio Kuckerman, who's the executive director of the Cohen Center for Jewish Students here at the University of Illinois and director of the Hillel Foundation here. He'll be talking as part of the series Faith in Action from a Jewish Perspective. That's noon at the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. It's a free program. You can order a lunch there in advance by calling 337-1500. Or you can take your own lunch or simply listen to the free lecture. Noon, April 26, part of Friday Forum. Also at the Y, coming up the first week, first full week of May is collections for their annual program, where people donate all kinds of things that they don't need anymore from their garage or attic or closets. The Y calls it dump and run. You can just dump the stuff at the Y during that week. The Y collects it, sorts it, all kinds of clothes and books and CDs and household furniture and all kinds of things that are still useful. They will save them up in big semi-trucks, and in the fall have a grand sale at the University Stock Pavilion for a couple days for incoming students, particularly international students, can stock their whole apartment often with things for their kitchens and everything else just from that sale very, very cheaply. Makes a little money for the Y. It keeps a lot of things out of the waste stream, and people get great bargains in the fall. But the Y will be collecting from 9 till 4 most of those days. They're open till 6 on May 9th. It begins collecting at the University Y May 6th, and it goes through May 17, the collection process. If you have questions, call 337-1500. Well, back to our guest today on Keeping the Faith. We're talking with Peter Wallace. And there may be people who joined us so late they have no idea what day one is. Peter, give us the shortest elevator speech about that.
Well, day one is a weekly radio program also available on our website at dayone.org. We say we are the voice of the mainline Protestant churches. We proclaim a passionate and positive message from the gospel.
And it's heard on 200 radio stations throughout the U.S. Tell us how, if people are listening who aren't close to one of those radio stations, how they could maybe get that to happen.
Well, that would be great. We're on all sorts of radio stations, from our flagship station here in Atlanta is the News Talk number one station in Atlanta, WSB. But we're also on a few college stations. We're on music stations of all genres and some Christian stations. You name it, we're on all kinds of stations, even some low-power FM stations. And
now, you provide the content to these stations free.
Absolutely.
But in some cases, the stations ask for a fee to broadcast it, as I understand it.
Well, that's true. Most do. The vast majority of our stations actually air our program as a public service because it is ecumenical and because it is of good quality, and it is something that they feel benefits their community. In many cases, churches will sponsor the program in their communities.
So local congregations could join together and ask a local station to carry it and find out if they would do it as a pro bono service or if they would require a small fee.
Yeah, and all that information is also on our website, dayone.org.
Okay. And tell us about how your organization has sort of grown as podcasts have become so much more popular. I know here on WILL, we just have thousands of people from all over the world who listen to our locally produced programs.
That's the amazing thing, isn't it, Steve? We can check and see who listens to our program on the podcast through the website. It's also available through iTunes, the podcast store. But we get listeners from, 160 countries who tune in, and I've actually heard from many of them, and it's so fascinating to hear. There was a young woman who, we were on the American Forces Radio Network in Japan, and she would tune in to the program and listen and then read the transcript on our website to help with her English. Huh. We also heard from a group in Australia that uses the program as kind of a Bible study. We're on the air in the Reading Service radio station in New Zealand. And there was a pastor in Vietnam who used the program. In Nepal, I mean, it's just amazing. But across the country, you know, we hear so many folks, because it's so easy to listen to whenever you want, listen to the podcast. And that has just exploded. We love being on the radio, because the interesting thing is people will listen to us accidentally. They may have left the music station on their radio in their car, and then they happen to get up and drive somewhere on Sunday, and our program is on, and they hear this preaching that they've never heard before. We had a
preacher, and it makes sense, and it's logical and reasonable.
Yeah, but it's interesting, because a couple of years ago we had a preacher on who was talking about the church's history of not welcoming people if they are of different sexual orientation or different whatever, and that the pain that had caused. And he was really asking forgiveness for that on behalf of the church. It was a very hopeful message. And I got an email from someone who just happened to listen. He actually had woken up too early on a Sunday morning for his taste, and he felt that if he could turn the radio on and listen to a droning preacher, he'd go back to sleep. But he got engrossed in this message, and he wrote and said, you know, I'm an atheist, but I just want you to know that I'm glad that there are Christians out there who believe what you believe. That made a terrific impact on him, and he was going to tell people about it. We actually heard from two other people by email who had gone to our website and listened to the program, and also said, you know, I don't believe, but I'm glad you're there. And so that, you know, that would never have happened if we weren't on the radio. So it's good to be on the radio, and it's good to be available by podcast for people who really want to seek out the programs.
We're down to our last 5 or 6 minutes, but let me give the phone numbers in case another listener or two would like to sneak in a quick question. 333-9455. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, 217-333-9455. Long distance, punch in 800-222-9455. Peter, you have had preachers in the last several years who have dealt with some very controversial issues. What else besides gay-lesbian issues, for example?
Well, it's interesting. One of the most, I think the program that actually got the most feedback was one by one of our favorite preachers, Barbara Lundblad, who is a professor of preaching at Union Seminary in New York. And this program aired just before we entered into Iraq. And the Iraq War. There was, you know, movement towards sending our troops there, and she preached a message on Naaman from the Hebrew Scriptures. Naaman had to humble himself in order to be healed of his leprosy, and he was the king of his nation, and so she was making the point that we need to humble ourselves, and in light of this coming conflict. And we got quite a bit of positive response to that message, but we also got quite a bit of negative response that we essentially were communists and anti-American. But I think she was rather prophetic with that message. We don't try to be too controversial. We've had gay and lesbian preachers on the program, but our purpose is not necessarily to arouse controversy so much as it is to really proclaim kind of a hopeful, Bible-centered message for life today. You know, this past week, we have been through the ringer as a nation through the Boston tragedy and in Texas and so forth.
And now an earthquake in China.
Absolutely.
Yes,
right. And, you know, how do we make sense of the world we live in, and what can we do to make a more positive place in the name of God? And So that's more of our focus than, say, trying to raise controversy.
How much in advance do your preachers tape their messages? How current can they be?
That's a difficult thing because we do tape usually about 6 to 8 weeks ahead of time. So, but it's interesting because so often a sermon is relevant without our expecting it. You know, when something happens that the nation's attention is focused on something, there's still a good word that can come through, even though when it was recorded, we had no idea. We did, in the case of September 11, 2001, produce very quickly a program featuring a message from the dean of the cathedral here in Atlanta, Sam Candler. And we sent that to, I don't know, 1,000 radio stations in the about 2 weeks after that happened to give some sort of Christian context and hope and to that awful event. And a number of stations broadcast that just as a way to serve their listeners in that time.
We are out of time today. This Sunday, our guest has been Peter Wallace. And Peter, thank you very much for talking with us today about Day One. And if people want more information, they may go to dayone.org.
Steve, it's been an honor. Thank you for your good work.
Well, thank you for being on the program. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we have two guests, Rabbi Norman Klein of Sinai Temple and Chester Alwes, retired professor of choral music at the University of Illinois, the author of an upcoming book from Oxford University Press on the history of choral music. They'll be talking about Handel's oratorio, Judas Maccabeus. That's next week here on Keeping the Faith. The following week, May 5, 2013, Julie Beiler, conductor of the chorale, will be our guest talking about their upcoming May 12th concert at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. Also by phone, Elizabeth Treat, a wonderful soprano who will be participating, singing in that concert, will be our guest on May 5th. Coming up later in May, guest host Stan Yankus will be speaking about interviewing some local Catholic priests about the new Pope, Pope Francis. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
So, first, a super huge thanks to all the listeners who routinely support WILL. Okay, now that I've said that, I'll speak directly to the folks who love this station but just haven't gotten around to making it official. If you've been listening for just a few weeks, or for years, consider making your first-time donation during this pledge drive. New members are an essential part of making this drive a success. So take the plunge. Become a supporter. Call 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org.
This is Vic DiGeronimo. Many listeners join us every day for Classic Mornings. Some probably started out as curious listeners, not classical music fans. The more they listened, the more they discovered music they enjoyed that they weren't able to find anywhere else on the radio. And how about you? Won't you join us, even if you consider yourself just a curious listener? My guess is it's just a matter of time before you become a regular. Classic Mornings, Monday through Friday from 9 to noon on FM 90.9.
This is Illinois.